So welcome to podcast number three with Dr. Jim, coming to you from the boys' room. So it's been a, I guess it's been what, a couple months maybe since our last podcast, but we're glad to be back in action and hope to be coming at you with some more podcasts in the future. Today's podcast is sponsored by Pagogi, and if you guys aren't familiar with this website, it's all about Japanese food. So you can check out some really cool interviews that Pagogi has done with various chefs and Japanese companies from around the world. They've been around for quite a bit, and we're happy that they've kind of picked up on Dr. Jim's site. So again, thank you to our sponsor, Pagogi. If you want to check them out, you can find them at pagogi.com, Pogogi.
Nihon Ryori o tabetai desu.
And there is Dr. Jim showcasing his knowledge of the Japanese language. Dr. Jim, what are we smoking and drinking this evening?
Tonight we're having Gerard Bertrand Totaval, which is a Grenache Syrah Carignan blend from France, which recently was featured in Wine Spectator and got 91 out of 100 points.
And how is it tasting?
It's actually quite a nice dark red with a nice bouquet that has almost a caramel type of a smell to it and a very well balanced taste.
Price?
The price is around in $22 a bottle. As it is, I believe, 14.5% alcohol.
Where did you say that was from?
This is from France. It's from southern France.
Have you been drinking a lot more French wines these days, or?
Probably drinking more wines from other countries, like South Africa, and some now from Tasmania, some from Spain, because of the price points.
A lot of
French wine, especially the higher end French wine, has gotten to be quite expensive.
Yeah, that's interesting because it seems that a lot of the regions that perhaps were a little bit more prominent in winemaking that have longer histories, like Bordeaux or some of the more famous regions as of late, such as Napa, are kind of losing ground to other, perhaps more. Other regions and other locations that are maybe not as well known for making wine, like New York, and in some cases, like even China now is getting into the wine market. Have you, and it seems like you're and have been for a while tasting wines from these other places, kind of like how the microbrewery scene for beer is really taking off.
Yeah, I think viticulture has gotten to be very good in a lot of areas, and the science behind winemaking is now spread a lot more through different countries. And because of that, I think there's a lot of good winemakers, especially small winemakers, who are making very good wine on a basis that we can sometimes get now in other areas of the world, but start out in places like Oregon and Washington and as we said, Tasmania and Australia were originally, and now other small countries that are coming up with really good wine because techniques and knowledge about wine and vinification has become so diverse.
And I guess it's a lot easier to kind of educate oneself if you're trying to start a winery with the internet, and information is a lot more accessible.
Yeah, the information age has made a big difference. Though there still has to be some classical knowledge and some training to that person, whoever's doing the actual winemaking, to really make outstanding wines. I think, and that I think comes with time and with practice, I would think.
It's still a craft.
It's still a craft, yes.
So another question that came into us was on wine glasses and the shapes of wine glasses, and whether or not they affect the taste. I think it's fair to say they definitely allow wine to be sensed differently in terms of aroma,
Mm-hmm.
But how about your opinion on the wine glass shape as it relates to taste? Or is it just kind of like the placebo effect?
There's a lot of companies that have made a lot of money on wine glass shapes. And there's been lots of changes over history in the wine glass shapes, from early days to now. Certain wines do definitely have aroma changes in different glasses. Some will help white wines breathe easier. Some will help red wines breathe easier. With champagnes and that, certain glasses will help keep the aeration and the actual bubble production to last longer. Whether it actually affects taste or not, it's more probably it affects the aroma. And some of them will, be quite varying the surface areas, will allow more of the aromas to come out or stay longer in a wine that basically white wines will not keep their aroma as long if the glass is too open. Red wines tend to keep, since they're heavier and more tannic, tend to keep their aromas longer, so a wider-based glass works better. Champagnes lose their aromas quicker, and they lose their aeration faster, and so certain glasses will tend to keep that longer.
It's interesting that today's podcast is sponsored by Pagogi, the Japanese food site. And it makes me think of soba noodles, the topic that we're discussing now in terms of aromatics and, you know, its effect on flavor and things like that. One of the ideas behind eating soba noodles and the slurping effect is to take in some air, which helps with taste, because I think air and aromatics plays a part in taste, right?
Exactly what you do with wine, by bringing it across your palate and slurping it back and forth to bring in some air at the same time to bring out the aroma and flavors.
Yeah, because I guess it would be like if you plugged your nose and you drank wine, it would taste different than if you were inhaling through your nostrils and drinking wine. You'd have a totally different flavors.
Same as having a cold or something when you're trying to taste the different flavors, and a good percentage of your, in fact, most of the flavors that you actually taste are actually smell, because there's only really four tastes in your mouth, and the rest comes from what happens in your nose.
Mm-hmm.
So aeration breaks it up, lets it go across your palate, feeds those areas of your nose so you can get all the different flavors and that, and some people who are super tasters, that is how they get all their information, is what comes across their palate and then goes up into the nasal passages and through the olfactory system, and then from there they sort of arrive at their opinions on the wine.
How about crystal glasses? Or is that just more of a material?
There are different glasses that both of crystal. There are some glasses now that actually have some breathing capabilities. There's thoughts about thinner glasses. All of these are sort of little nuances that, if you like a wine and you like a wine, probably doesn't matter as much what you drink it in if you like that wine.
Mm-hmm.
For each wine, whether it's going to make that big of a difference, it's what you like.
Subjective.
Subjective, very subjective, yes.
Speaking of aeration, we actually, in our next podcast coming up, we should have, by that time, taken receipt of a product that was kindly being sent to us. The product is currently in transit from Aervana, and I hope I'm saying that right. It's Aervana, Aervana, and if you want more information, you can go to their website, aervana.com. And like I said, they've been kind enough to send Dr. Jim a sample of their latest product, which is an aerator. And I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this product or seen it on the internet. There's been quite a few views on it. And we're really looking forward to getting our hands on this and testing it out. And we won't tell you much more about that. We're going to wait till the next podcast. But we just wanted to say a quick thank you to Aravana. And again, the website is aervana.com, aervana.com. Moving on to maybe another question. Is, in your opinion, white wine, and again, going back to the subjectivity, a lot of people store their white wine in the fridge or in a much cooler at a much cooler temperature than, say, for example, red wine. And one of the questions is it fine to drink white wine right out of the fridge, or should it, you know, should you let it sit for, say, 30 minutes?
Okay, there's lots of theories on this. It should be at the right temperature. Probably letting it sit for a little while, if it's colder than the right temperature, allows more of the aromas to come off the wine. As long as the wine is at the right temperature, the taste is probably good whether you let it sit for 30 minutes or whether you drink it right away. If it sits in the glass for a while, it's going to warm up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you have your hands near the glass, or if you have it on the stem, not as much, but if you have it on the glass, it will warm it up, bring the aromas out. But having a white wine at the proper temperature really adds to the crispness of taste.
Yeah, I think it's just another one of those things that maybe people are maybe delving in a little bit too deeply on, and maybe trying to analyze it a little bit too deeply. And it's just one of those things where it's just, if you like your white wine a little bit colder on a hot summer day versus a little bit warmer on, you know, in the winter months with your salad, it's just kind of whatever you like. Right?
It's what you like in the end. It all these things are nuances for people who want to delve into that, but in reality, drink the wine the way you like to drink it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a good philosophy to have. It's kind of like hot food gets warm, cold food gets warm, everything kind of goes to warm or towards the center.
Yep.
At a certain time.
Entropy.
So what's been going on with Dr. Jim lately? What's new and exciting?
Actually, not much. It's been quite quiet around here. Watching hockey and getting ready for winter.
Closing up the pool soon.
Closing up the pool soon. Hopefully we'll get a few more warm days.
But you still swim when it's, what is the pool at right now?
Pool is 70.
And you're still swimming?
I'll swim down to when it's 40 to 50. Swimming in lakes for a long time, you get used to swimming when it's cold. And there's lots of people who love diving in cold water after they've been in a hot sauna.
Well,
it's all climatization.
I'll take your word for it. So we're smoking tonight something a little bit different. We're smoking backwoods.
Mm-hmm.
So generally we're smoking Cubans. I think the last podcast we were smoking Partagas. Cubans are, you know, that's a seed that we're smoking quite a bit. We also smoke a lot from the Dominican, occasionally some cigars from Nicaragua. I remember that you had a very well-aged box of, what were they, Hoya de Nicaragua?
Yes, old Hoya de Nicaragua, yes, from the 80s.
Which, if you get them fresh, are really strong.
Yes.
Really earth, really, they have a really strong kind of grass-like taste.
Especially the newer ones. The newer ones are very heavy and a heavier smoke.
But you had an aged box of Hoya de Nicaraguas, and they were amazing.
They've been aged properly and kept at a proper temperature and humidity for 10 to 15 years.
Well, I remember that one evening.
I was crying after we smoked the last one.
There's no more?
There's no more left,
okay.
But they were good. They were very good. Yes.
That was a memorable smoke. Now, what we're smoking tonight is probably the polar opposite. We're smoking backwoods. And I don't know. I like them, particularly the honey berry flavor. And they are quite unsightly.
They're like hand-rolled tobacco.
Hand-rolled tobacco, but I think they're actually rolled by a machine in a factory.
Yeah.
But they look like your old-school kind of Clint Eastwood-type movies where they're those thin-rolled cigars in like a Western movie. But the honeyberry flavors are...
They're good, they're bad, and they're ugly.
You know what? That is exactly what they are. They are good, bad, and... And they're not bad. I like them, but they are definitely unsightly, but in kind of a really character way.
Yeah.
So that's what we're smoking this evening. Have you been keeping up with what's going on in the world of timekeeping lately? Watches, pocket watches?
Nothing really lately. Been more into clocks lately. Various clocks have come available through family and friends that no longer want clocks. So I've been into sort of repair of certain clocks and getting them running and cleaning them and repairing the various chiming mechanisms and stuff.
One thing that's been really kind of a little bit more fashionable these days in the world of watches is... For example, there's a lot of watch aficionados that would love to get their hands on some really, really old school, very rare, for example, Submariners.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to get, especially the mill subs. And
very expensive.
Yeah, the red subs, the mill subs, the old school Tudors, some of the old Sea Dwellers. But there's a lot of companies out there now that are taking... new watches, refurbishing them in the sense that they're modifying them to look like the old ones. What's your opinion on that?
It's what you want. Again, as long as they're purported as being the old ones, it's probably fine.
It's whatever you like.
It's whatever you like. And they're certainly a lot more available, a lot more better priced. I know they're taking the lug protectors off.
Crown protectors.
Crown protectors. They're changing sometimes the crown itself, changing the sizes and the bezels on the watches. There are people who are blacking out and matting out watches.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you like. But as long as they're not being purported as an old watch,
yeah,
then I think it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. They're forcing patinas on the dials and things like that. I know you're not a really... I know that based on your collection... It doesn't seem like you're a big fan of the blacked out watches.
Well, I would like one. I think it's just like when we were in Vancouver, we saw a matte black Lamborghini, and it looked really cool. So, you know, having something like that, one of those, I don't think I could collect a whole bunch of them, but one would be sort of an interest.
So, talking about collecting, let's say someone wanted to get into collecting wine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you collect a lot of things. You collect ancient weaponry, watches, cars, pipes, wine, cigars, everything. Shoes. If somebody wanted to get into wine and start collecting, what advice would you give someone like that? And what would you suggest they start with?
Okay. It depends if you're into it for investing or you're into it for drinking. If you're into it for drinking, you buy the wines you like. Store them properly. Don't go past certain ages, but try them over time by having enough that you can actually 5 years down the line, 7 years down the line, 10 years down the line, try them against and see when they become their best. If you're actually into for investing, it's a whole different ballgame. If you're into for investing, I would actually get involved in some professional advice for that, because that is big money and it is really keeping things at proper temperatures over time. And it's a whole different ballgame, because that's almost like the stock market then.
And I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you're talking about getting into wine collecting or just getting into wine in general, if you start with wines that you like, that will then give you the ability to familiarize yourself with different tastes. to become familiar with a certain grape varietal, for example, and make it easier for you to differentiate
between It's like all collecting, one gets more and more specific and more and more in-depth as one goes along and as you learn knowledge over time. Same thing if you're collecting watches, if you're collecting antiquities or anything like this, you become more specific in what you like and what's important to you, and you become more of an expert over time. And at some point in time, a lot of it sort of, it becomes too expensive for you to because you're interested in things that are just too rich.
And what is Dr. Jim like? What's some of your favorite varietals?
Wines, I'm a Cab fan, and I like a lot of the French wines. The blended French wines are very good, and I like Italian Barolos.
The big flavors,
yeah.
Your least favorite?
If anything tastes like watermelon, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a fan of watermelons.
Well, you know, that's funny too, because you don't like grapes. Oh, sorry. Let me back up.
I don't like raisins.
You don't like raisins.
Yes.
Why don't you like raisins?
Because it's a horrible waste of a grape.
You think they're better off using grapes for wine?
They're better off using grapes for wine than for raisins. There's a lot of people who like raisins. I don't mean to be upset the raisin people, but I like grapes and wine.
But from a medical perspective, as a doctor, grapes are good for you, though.
Grapes are very good. They have iron. They have lots of energy. They're good for kids as they're growing as an alternative to sugar. So I think they're fine. But I'm not a fan of raisins.
Well, I think that's probably it for today's podcast. So we just want to thank again our sponsor, Pogogi.com. If you're a fan of Japanese food, check them out, Pogogi.com. A lot of great stuff on there. You can check them out on their Twitter account. And again, we're looking forward to the Airvana Air Raider that's coming to us, which we hope to review in time for the next podcast. So enjoy, everyone, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.